Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
It's a tremendous opportunity to give, you know, young men and women, you know, kind of that kickstart to what they want to do in life. For us, you know, we played basketball, so it was like, oh, this is what I'm doing. Then after basketball, I was like, what do I do now? So kind of giving, you know, students and athletes that early on detection of what they want to do or what they might be interested in and getting them started early.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by one of our favorite sponsors, Connor Sports. Connor Sports, one of the world leaders in sports surfaces, the official floor of the Final Four and the Olympics. They do everything from NBA floors all the way down to rec centers. Contact ConnorSports.com for more information. Today's special guest on the Rising Coaches Podcast is Yusuf Fitzgerald. How you doing, sir?
I'm pretty good, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Yusuf is currently the athletic director at the Piney Woods School here in Mississippi. We're talking to the reigning coach of the year in the Mississippi JUCO League last year. He was at Hines Community College, did a phenomenal job there, kicked our butt twice last year. But Yusuf, man, give us your little journey here, man. You've had a very interesting journey, and now you're an athletic director, but you're much more than that. But kind of walk us through, you know, I know you played back in the day. Walk us through from your childhood basketball all the way to where you are now.
Well, man, I appreciate it, B, man. I really enjoyed coaching in the league with you guys, man. I think you guys do a great job. You and your program down at Southwest Community College that you've had, you know, for years now, enrolling with, you know, Division I guys popping out of there and then being a force in our league competitively every year. So kind of my background, B, is I played at Piney Woods, is where I am now, which is a, you know, boarding school sitting in Mississippi about 15 minutes outside of Jackson. I went to Piney Woods to get some better structure as a high school child. Well, junior high, actually, because I went as a 12-year-old and played there from seventh grade till ninth grade, then left, went to ninth grade at Velma Jackson, and then begged to go back to Piney Woods because of the structure. Because I got 1 year of that public school, and it was like, I'm not going to make it through this one. So went back to Piney Woods, man. They made me sit out a year, and then I played my junior and senior years. We went 73-10 those 2 years and won back-to-back state titles. I've never lost a conference or division game in 2A, which was our division back in the day. We finished number one in the state my senior year. We were eighth in the state, I think, my junior year, somewhere in there. So we finished top 15 in the state both years. I went on to play at Tougaloo College, had some Division I offers. Was a mid-major player, but I chose to do some things off the court that wasn't in line with what Division I coaches wanted to hear or see. So ended up going to Tougaloo College, which is a great experience right there in Jackson. I played 3 years before I started working privately with my uncle and some more family members in the city. So had a good time at Piney Woods, man. And then once I was done, you know, around here, moved to Chicago for 3 years, man. I coached Nike AAU. With EYBL, the inaugural year I was with Main Streets. And so got a chance to coach Anthony Davis, Kendrick Nunn. I mean, I can name them. I mean, of course, you know EYBL. Our whole team was loaded with Division I kids. Jamari Traylor that went to Kansas, Field Green and St. John's. I mean, Shiak went to Bradley. The Twins went to Northern Illinois. Juice went to Toledo. I mean, I can, you know how that goes, man. I enjoyed that. And then got the job at IMG, which was crazy because my mentor, Lauren Jackson, that runs Victory Rock Prep down in Sarasota, Florida, got the job with Andy Borman, who just opened up the Earl Monroe Renaissance Academy up in New York. And so they were good friends. They went down. Andy was the director. Lauren was the, you know, post-grad coach. He told Andy he just wanted me to have him on his staff. He wanted me on his staff. And I couldn't believe it because it was one of those dreams. You know, IMG is that. You're trying to get in there any way possible. I was applying for like janitor's jobs. Like if you let me in on grounds, I was going to slide in the gym and show them what I could do. And so got down there, man. And, you know, they were in a good place, but just needed that extra push of expertise of, you know, building championship cultures. And my boss at the time, Lauren and Andy, did a great job of building that culture. And I was a part of it and enjoyed that for 4 years, of course. If I name you every kid that went Division I, Division II, III, and NAIA, it'd be ridiculous because every kid is placed from down there. Did that for 4 years. Came to Jones Junior College right there in Ellisville for 2 years. Worked for Raheem Lockhart. Finished top 10 in the country my first year. Top 10 in the first year. And that second year, we recruited a class that was pretty good that ended up winning the regional and the state that next year. But I took a job at Iona after my second year. And went to Iona with Tim Clues, Jared Grasso, Brock Erickson. Yeah. I don't know why I want to call him Brock. Brock Erickson, man, that staff with Cal Zanetti, both with him and Coop. I mean, it was a great staff, man. We went to the tournament, won our championship in the conference, man, in the MAC conference. And it was an experience that I would never forget, especially the NCAA tournament. It was just different. Then was blessed to get the Hines job, blessed to get it. Taking it over, it was, Ralph Moore had been there for 22 years. And it was kind of one of those things where he was at that point of, kind of coasting. He was retired. And, Hines at the time just wasn't putting a lot of energy into the basketball program. So took the job, man. Richard Bradley was my assistant. Richard Bradley owns the M-Bar and was an assistant at Jackson State the last 3 years. I'm just retired. And we changed the program, man. I can honestly say in the 4 years we were there, we went from the doormat in 9-12 my first year, with beating Pearl River and Southwest with my highlights that year. So the next year brought in some more guys, went 11-12. And the year after that, we went 19-6. And that was the year that it kind of culminated, finished Final Four in the region. Had, of course, throughout the years, we've had guys popping out of Hines as far as Division I and NAIA and things like that. Everywhere I've been, I've always put guys in school. And then last year, man, it just, we went on a roll. I didn't expect it. I thought the year before our team was better than last year's, but they proved me a little different. Started off 7-0, finished 13-3, Final Four in the region. Had an All-American point guard, Jordan Johnson, which was a tremendous young man. Like, the young man that he is compels to, what he is as a basketball player. Like, it's nowhere close. And he ended up being an All-American player of the year. That team, accomplished some feats that Hines hadn't done in years, if not ever, from back in the day, from what I've heard. So it was exciting, man. And now coming here, I chose to come here because, at Hines and in college, we get our 15 to 18 guys, and that's it. But what I was seeing on campuses was the other students that were left out, because our guys, discipline, structure, they're on a regiment, every day they're going to class, we checking the classes, we got them in a structure to where they're going to be successful. But other students were not having the same structure. And my thing was, okay, our citizens in the world are becoming different. And I think it's because of where they're coming from. And a lot of times environment nurtures that behavior. And my thing is to try to create an environment that we can nurture behavior that's more productive in our society. And Piney Woods offered me that opportunity, for me knowing it from being there myself and graduating from there. And then also knowing what their mission is and what they're about. So for me, coming here, I felt like I could make a larger impact on students, not just student athletes, but students in a whole, and then society as a whole. So coming back is like a mission that I'm on. We were great doing it in basketball, and we're going to continue that here because I'm the athletic director, so we have athletics. It's a typical high school with bowling, volleyball, boys and girls basketball, tennis, archery, track and field, and cross country. And then I'm adding baseball in 2022. So it's one of those situations where I can kind of build my own IMG in a sense. And we're sitting on 2,000 acres, and literally 2,000 acres of school land. Like, and then this campus is 65. We got about 26 to 30 buildings. Then we have a 250-acre farm, which is the thing that I'm most excited about, because our students on campus are knowledge-based learning curriculum. So, we're hands-on and problem-solving, and then they're actually doing work as well. So they have a work-study program on campus that everybody participates in. And it kind of offsets the tuition costs, because every kid is on some type of scholarship here. So you got you have agriculture, which is your agribusiness and working on the farm and helping them with chores and duties down there. You got your landscaping, of course, with the students that are able to, help out with cutting grass and you know, putting down your mulch and your straw and different things. And then you have your custodial work that they will participate in as well. And then they're actually our postgrad team right now, which we added this year, which I'm proud of. They're actually participating in the development of, you know, fundraising and seeing that side of operations of a school. So it's a tremendous opportunity to give, you know, young men and women, you know, kind of that kickstart to what they want to do in life. For us, you know, we played basketball. So it was like, oh, this is what I'm doing. Then after basketball, I was like, what do I do now? So kind of giving, you know, students and athletes that early on detection of what they want to do or what they might be interested in and getting them started early. So enjoying it, man. I've been here since July, but it's like I never left. And some of the people that are, you know, still here now were here when I was here, when I attended. So it's kind of, you know, that coming home feeling, and it's always good to come home. So really excited about it, man.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, you talked about impacting lives, and you know, as a college coach, you got 12 to 15 guys every year, and you know, about half of them come back, but you're able to impact so many more lives, and that's who you are. And we need more guys like you that are willing to sacrifice yourself for other people. That humbleness of you is what makes you who you are and very special. So talk to us a little bit. So you transitioned from a, you know, you quote unquote left a junior college head coaching job, a job that you flipped, you know, like you said, bottom feeder, you know, probably second or worst job technically in our league, you know, based off a lot of different things. And you found a way to finish in the top four back to back years out of 19 schools, which is remarkable, and all accolades to you and your program and your staff that you built there. But, you know, talk to us about a little bit different from going from a head coach running, you know, a basketball program to running a whole athletic department. And besides the impact part, what has been the biggest adjustment in your first few months in the job?
No time in the day. It's like I wake up with a to-do list, and my to-do list is, you know, paragraphs long. I don't get to my to-do list when I get to school. It's like putting out fires. Somebody has an issue, or somebody has a question, or you're pulled into this meeting or this tour or this phone call or this Zoom. I mean, it's every day there is something that's not on your list that you will have to do. And once you look up to get to your list, it's 1 a.m. Like literally, especially with family and trying to balance it. That's the biggest transition for me right now, just being over everything and everything having to come through me and my way. So like with us in basketball, it was just easy for us. Okay, I come to work. I got those 12 to 15 guys. I got my staff. That's it. And then as a head coach, I had a structure put in place to where, you know, my assistants couldn't, you know, drop the ball. So at the end of the day, it was really coming in, practicing, and then everything else was already done. And that's kind of how I transitioned out from Hines. Was I was comfortable with my assistant being able to take over that job and giving him that opportunity as well. And I felt like, you know, transitioning was going to be tough. Because of the coaching piece of wanting to be on the floor still, but I'm getting better with it hour by hour. It's 1 hour I'm good, the next hour I'm not, I'm on the floor. Like yesterday I was literally supposed to have been observing practice for my postgraduate team, which Thomas Carr does a tremendous job. Like Thomas is Paul Millsap's cousin. He was running core four postgrad over in Atlanta. I pulled him from over there to here with us. So we can kickstart our postgraduate program here. So I went to just go evaluate his practice yesterday. And I was sitting on the podium. I was leaning on the podium, just watching, you know, taking mental notes. And the next thing I know, now, Brian, I don't know who and what happened. All I know is I ended up on the baseline and I'm screaming, "Getting help. Why are you not to the middle?" I'm like, "Coach, hold up. Why is he not in the middle of the floor? Take off. You know, you got it down and back. Get out of here." So it became, and I looked up and coach is looking at me and I'm looking at him like, oh my bad. Like, I apologize. But then talking to him today, he's like, "Man, I need that." Because, you know, Brian, we come with so much energy and we've done it so long that, you know, we know what we're looking at and what needs to be tuned up. And just having those other set of eyes for him was tremendous for him. And I told him, I said, "Hey, man, I apologize. I can't give you that every day. Like, as much as you want it, like, I have to go back to my office and do what I was doing." So it's been weird. You know, I call it weird because I miss the coaching piece, but then I'm forcing myself to mature into the athletic director piece and trusting my staff and letting them be, you know, who they are and then grow. Because that's the biggest thing that I knew for me in coaching. I had a lot of great mentors. Lauren Jackson's one. Lemuel Jones here at Piney Woods some years back. He's another. Kenny Natt down at IMG, Andy Boardman. I mean, I can keep naming, you know, guys in the business, Tim Clues, Jerry Grasso. I mean, my guys that I can call, you know, anytime and I can get advice. Robert Kirby, Kevin Clark over at Towson. It's just guys I talk to on a regular. Kevin Sutton at Florida Gulf Coast. I can lean on those guys at any time. You and I talk enough, you know, just to keep, you know, things fresh. And then now I just switched to, you know, being the overseer of the camp. And it's fun.
That's special. Yeah, you can take coach out of your title, but they're never going to take it out of the man there.
Right.
Coaching, it's addictive. It's addictive. Yeah. Like you said, that time management piece is so important. And finding the tools and finding the ways to manage your day instead of getting managed by your day is so important. And, you know, getting things done outside of business hours. I mean, we work 24/7, and finding a way to get all that stuff done is really important. And you mentioned, you know, Coach Carr does a really good job with his group and things like that. And, you know, every good head coach needs some help. I know right now, you know, I don't know how long that job would be open because it's a really good job. But you have a position open right now.
Yes. So our high school team, I had a guy that I wanted to put in that place. It didn't kind of work out. And so that position opened back up. And so it's a dorm parent position, of course. And then we also have some position on campus, like a history teacher. So you're hired here for one job, and then coaching is on top of it, because we want you to wear multiple hats here, because we want you to make an impact larger than just the sport. So we want you involved in more than just the 2 hours or the hour and a half that you have them in the gym. We want you, you know, you involved holistically in that upbringing and rearing of that student athlete. So the job is a good job. We have multiple opportunities that you can do and also be my coach. This year is our pilot year, you know, for me with, you know, bringing back athletics this year, because they shut them down last year because of pandemic. So it's kind of that building it back out. We're sitting on about, you know, almost 100 kids this year. We want to grow our enrollment. But for that job, I'm looking for, you know, someone that knows what they're doing, has some experience in coaching, especially with a boarding school setting or a college setting. And looking for someone that, you know, young and wants to move up in the business, because although I'm, you know, here for the students, I'm also here for my staff and trying to groom and get guys to the next level. Because I think, you know, with what I've done and laying some groundwork and a path, I think we can get other guys into our business, especially college coaching, prep school coaching, high school coaching across the country. So it's one of those deals. It's like it's not an internship, but I'm going to help you. Get to where you're trying to go. So hopefully we can get some people off this Rising Coaches, man, that'll give me some calls and some emails and say, hey, coach, I'm interested, so I can get down the line with this thing, because season starts soon. And, you know, got a good opportunity, man, that I'm trying to grow, and it'll be perfect to get one of our guys in here.
For sure. Yeah, joining Rising Coaches, you find out about jobs that you wouldn't find anywhere else. And, you know, you can join Rising Coaches today at risingcoaches.com. And we do a great job with trying to help place guys. And like you said, you know, great leaders don't just develop players. They develop their people. They develop their staff. And you know, you've groomed a guy that's now the head coach at Hines. You've had other guys that you work with and work along. You mentioned some of the mentors that helped you. And now you're in a position now you can give back. And, you know, you're going to make that Piney Woods, you know, prep school and obviously the high school job into something that, you know, even the JUCOs in Mississippi can't do because of our limitations with out-of-staters and different things. And so, you know, you want to make it your own IMG of Mississippi, and you're going to do it, and you're going to do a great job. And anybody listening to this podcast that has, you know, a good international kid or a good kid that may need that prep year, that's going to be a D1 player in a year, you know, send them Coach Fitzgerald. He's ready. Well, AD Yusuf Fitzgerald over there. But he'll be on the floor. I know he'll be coaching. He'll be coaching again. He can't take it out of him.
No, that's
awesome. You know, I'm excited for it. So one of the things in our program, we talk about core values, and we talk about who we are at Southwest Mississippi Community College. And ours are PhD, passion, humility, and discipline. PhD is the highest level of education. You've touched on the wholesome human, developing education, and things like that. And I can't think of a man that kind of fits our core values better than even you. and passion, especially. So you're a really passionate guy. You know, one thing that you watch you coach, like, you're animated, you have a lot of emotion, you're very passionate about anything and everything that you do. And it's not just basketball. And one thing that I've really enjoyed, you know, visiting with you, you know, you, Coach Ryan, you know, Coach Rodney at Meridian, are three guys in our league that I've thoroughly enjoyed, not just, you know, the mentorship, but, you know, actually not just talking about recruiting or not talking about basketball. Like, you're a passionate guy and about family. Just touch on just a little bit about it. You've had a lot of stressors in your life. You know, they, if you Google, hey, highest stressors in your life, you take a pandemic, you take what's going on in our country, you take getting married, you talk about kids, you talk about moving jobs, buying a house. You've done it all in the last couple of years. So talk to us a little bit about family, what it means to you, and kind of, you know, just touch on that for a minute.
Well, that's part of the driving force of why I chose this Pontywood's job, because, man, I've moved everywhere. I've been in Chicago, New York, New Orleans, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee. I've lived so many places that my wife now, she was just like, I don't want to do that. Like, and I was like, okay, you know, hey, we'll be okay. You know, I'll find a job. It's going to pay enough that you're going to be happy. Don't worry about what you don't want to do. Just come on. And so what I realized was she was right. Like, it's time to settle, because we have a 2-year-old now. So when I got the Hines job, we didn't have her, of course. And Nova came, I think, my second year here. And so it made me say, you know, let's settle somewhere for right now until, you know, my children are out of the school system to where they're in a good space before I move again, if I even move again, because this was something that was concrete. And I knew that they would have me here as long as I wanted to be here. So it's one of those things that I could retire from Pontywood and be okay. My wife was a big decision on that, because she has her family here in Mississippi. She's originally from Natchez, Mississippi, but I met her in Dallas. So it's, she's been this is the closest she's been to her family, you know, since she's been an adult. So it's kind of that my mom's here, her mom's here, my sisters are here. Two of my sisters are back in Atlanta, but my older sister is here. So my children being here, them being able to see me every day, especially at 5 o'clock. So every day that I come home, I'm able to see, you know, my 2-year-old that's about to be 3. I'm able to see my 9-year-old, and she's starting to get the pigtails, and she's talking about, you know, basketball and boys at the same time. It's like, you know, you don't miss anything anymore, because on that road in coaching, man, Brian, I get tunnel vision. Like you say, it's a passion, and it's like an obsession almost. Because once we hit season, it's nothing else. Like, I don't see anything, hear anything. If it's a trip that we're taking, I hear about the trip on the way. Like, where are we going again? Are we going to Florida? And it's like, what am I doing? What's my rules? Well, you can't be on the phone during these times. And the last trip, it just became, since I've been an AD, I was able to go on a trip with my wife. Left the baby, you know, with her mom. I literally did not use my phone the whole weekend for work, because it was nothing for me to do. It was an opportunity. Let me not say it was nothing for me to do. It's a lot I could have done. But it was an opportunity where the job I have now, I can kind of delegate, pass some things along for a couple of days, and then I can get text messages on the slick. Like, hey, text me at this time. She's going to be in the shower. I can text you back. You know, it's like I'm able to do that now, and it bodes well in your health. All right. So we're so caught up and wrapped up in winning or being the best, or, you know, grooming young men and women. And we get caught up in that, and we forget, like, wait a minute, when I go home, I have to give that same time. So it's gotten me kind of a good balance of family time, work. And then when I say not enough hours in a day, you know, that's included, because, you know, when I come home, the first thing I do is I put everything down, and I might be on the phone, but I'm playing with my daughter. So like, if somebody's listening to me or talking, it's like, you're distracted. Yeah. Cause I'm having a good time, and I'll call you back tomorrow. So it's like, those things that, you know, I ride bikes with my wife, we work out now. So it's fun with, you know, being able to have that foundation of family. Because the other thing, Brian, that I always say is, you are a product of your environment. You are a product of your influence. And if we're the influencers, we should be the guys that are teaching these young men, hey, this is how you are as a husband. This is how you are as a man. This is what you want to be in life. Like, take care of your family. Don't cheat on your wife. You know, stay at home. make sure you're spending time with your children. Be involved, not just the money guys of, oh, I sent some money, I sent $200, should be all right. Man, it costs way more a lot of money than $200 to take care of a child, first of all, and then you can't put a price tag on that time that you're spending with your children and your family. And I think if we can get society on that same page, a lot of places, I think we'd be in a better place with, you know, some curbing some of this crime, curbing some of this dropout rates, this homelessness. I think if we can just, you know, influence as many as we can, I think it'll be good, man.
Yeah. Time is your greatest asset. And if you can sacrifice that time and be present, be where your feet are. That should be our ultimate goal every day, is to be present no matter where we are, whether it's at the workplace or at home or with who you're having a conversation with and making them feel important. And we all need to hear that. We all need to be constantly reminded of what is most important. And that's, you know, makes you, you know, passionate about family enough to know what you value most as a human being, and, you know, how it can not correct, but take stepping stones in the right way to fixing many things going on in our world, and developing those people, investing in them and modeling the way. And if you do it, then it's easier for them to see what that looks like. And hopefully they can mimic what you've done. You talked a lot in a lot of things that you post and different things. You use the word humble and humility. And, you know, you're very open. You were even open on this podcast at the beginning about, you know, taking ownership, some accountability along the way, and where you kind of had your quote unquote shortcomings, but helped mold who you are. You know, you've lived in some interesting areas. You've lived in Jackson, Atlanta, you know, a suburb of New York City, even Chicago, you know, not the best places in the world all the time, but you've seen some stuff. Talk a little bit about, you know, where, how you've become who you are in terms of a humility standpoint, and, you know, taking ownership and accountability is probably the most challenging part that I've had within the job working here in Mississippi, is helping hold these guys accountable. But, you know, trying to erase 18 years of bad habits, of not understanding, taking ownership. What advice would you tell to other people of, you know, not only taking responsibility for yourself, but helping others take action and, you know, have accountability in their lives?
Well, I tell you, you know, I pride myself on humility because I've been in some tough situations as a child and as an adult. So growing up, and I tell people this because, you know, a lot of times we have young men and women that are going through some of the same things we have, but they don't identify because they don't know. And they're afraid to ask, and they're afraid to come forth of what they're dealing with, because everybody's taught, you know, whatever happens in the house, don't take it outside, and, you know, keep our business to ourselves. Well, sometimes we're going through things that we need the help. And like my dad set us up really well early on in my life, and turn around, he ended up making a choice of using some substances that he couldn't shake back from. And it caused our lives to derail. So I was at the top as a child, like wearing the polos, and I'm going to class, I'm going to school, got my perfect afro, you know, I got my shoes on, you know, I'm living life. And then immediately, like one day, it just changes, like nothing, no furniture in the house. I've been held for ransom before. My older sister and I, like, it's just my mom, my dad, domestic violence, like seeing all of that stuff. And then my mom saying, okay, look, I'm gonna make a decision for my kids. And so she takes us out of the house, moves us away from my father, divorces him, which is traumatic as well. And that's how I ended up bouncing around schools a little bit early on. And that was my issues coming out of high school, was nobody knew what I was going through, truthfully, and I was acting out. And so get to college, I'm still acting out. And my college coach, Coach James Turner, is a great dude. And he tells me, I want to be an electrical engineer. He said, dude, you're not going to be an electrical engineer playing for me. You don't have the time in the day. You're going to read psychology. I was like, all right, fine. Go to psychology class, and I start learning about myself. And that helped me with some of my humility, because it let me know I wasn't the only one. And like, it's more people like me out here. So, and it's more people that are have it worse than I do. And that put me in a space of, okay, it's not as bad as people make it to be. Your life, if you're alive and you're breathing, you're able to talk, walk, and be able to impact, you're doing okay with the world. So for me, I always remember being at zero. When we didn't have anything. As an adult, I've been at zero before, but it was my own bad choices with money management. But You know, when you're at that point where you don't know which way is left, you don't know where your next meal is going to come from. You don't know where you're going to stay tonight. Like I was moved from auntie to auntie, grandma to grandma. I mean, it was house to house for a while to where, you know, it was just not any stability. So now remembering those things and remembering how I felt, it allows me to be humble on the success and anything coming my way is all blessings because everything works off of God's plan. Like regardless of what we want to do and how we want to be in some of this stuff. Yeah. You can screw up God's plan. Yeah. But when you're living right and you're doing the right things and eating a bunch of that humble pie, as I call it, things end up lining up well for you. And that's been some of the things that, you know, I live off of. It's just, it could always be worse. It could always, it, no matter what, how good it is, how bad it is, it can be worse. And you, hinging upon, you know, pulling your boots up like my mom did and pulling yourself out of that worst situation is the only way. And humility is the only way to get you there. Like, I believe in, you know, the janitor is just as important as the president. I treat them all the same. Like, it does not matter who you are. And that goes from our relationship, you and I. And it's, and it was, you know, you came in as Brian Bender, you're not from here, and you got the Southwest head coaching job. And that first off, you know, had some people in a way because it was like, hell up, he's not from here and he got the head job. Like, no way, who is this guy? And it was like, I saw you were going through some of the similar things that I was going through with trying to balance and trying to get us, you know, a foothold on what you were trying to do in the business. And then talking to you, I heard the humility. I felt it. And a lot of people take, you know, some things that you may say or do the wrong way because it's like, oh, he's being cocky. No, he's not. He's reporting what goes on. Same thing that you guys do. Same thing everybody does across the country. We're doing the same thing, but it's always looked at a certain way. And it's like the humility brings it back to, you know what? I'm doing what I'm supposed to do because these are my morals. These are my standards. This is what I want to live by. And you've always prided yourself on, you know, having those core values and you stuck to them. And I believe the same thing. Like, my thing is always faith, humility, and hard work because, you know, prayer without works, you know what the rest of it is. And I pray a lot. I tell people, no disrespect to any Islamic faith, or I pray like a Muslim. Like I might break out in prayer, you know, middle of the day, and people be standing there looking at me like, man, what's wrong with you? I got to pray. Like, because things come at you, and the only way out of it sometimes is just pray, because if you respond or you react, it could be the wrong response to react, you know, in that moment. So you pray about it and just keep on moving. And so, like, for me, also with that prayer, my feet never stop. Like, my thing is, if you're up, it's going to be hard pressed for you to outwork me. Like, you're going to have to really be trucking to be outworking me because I'm working almost 24/7 like you are. Our universe aligns because the people who are on the same path, the people that are on the same morals, the same, you know, humility, the same, all the stuff we're talking about, all those people end up lining up if you ask me in the end. Some people call me nuts and you think you're a prophet or whatever. But I do believe that, you know, we align with like-minded thought processes and like-minded individuals with the same energy and passion. And that's what we come from, same way you and I, humility. And most of the guys, most of the guys in my circle are pretty humble guys.
Yep. That always helps. You are who you associate yourself with. And, you know, you said some really powerful things. I just want to touch on one. You kind of hinted at time, space, and opportunity to react. And, you know, from taking time to not necessarily react, but respond. And you giving yourself that time, space, and opportunity. Yours is through prayer. Others may be just giving that space. Others, you know, there's lots of different ways of doing it. You talked about your story and being able to relate and, you know, quote unquote, jump into other people's bodies and understand how they feel. But you'll never truly know exactly how they feel, but your story gives you kind of, stories make things more powerful. And that's what makes you who you are, because you're able to just kind of, you know, relate in a unique way and show that you got your back and you were able to come from the bottom and continue to trend upwards. And, you know, you're not done. We can't say you're just done because you're not done. And, you know, you're going to continue to work and do those things. And one thing you touched on my program a little bit, and from a standpoint of, yeah, I'm not from here. I was the youngest coach in the league. There were some major challenges when I first got this job, and we had a very talented roster. But as time has grown, as a leader, you figure out who you are. And I always knew who I was, but you budge those standards here and there to try and make things work, and it doesn't work. Once you know what your standards are and you live to those standards and you hold people accountable to those standards, you're going to attract the people that are like-minded as you. And that's kind of what's happened in recruiting and different things is, you know, I'm attracting the people that are Brian Bender type kids. And every year it's been more enjoyable, despite wins and losses, but we're still putting out players. We're still working for our guys. And it comes down to the foundation that you build in your program. And, you know, that's what transformed Hines is you didn't change. You just found people that fit who you were. And then, you know, every year, the last 2 years, you signed a kid late, James, that flipped the league. I remember I was sitting in July, it was July 4th weekend. I had taken 1 week off. And Southern Miss, I knew, was going to release one of their players. It was Najee Harris, who played for me for 1 year. He had a knee injury. And Najee would have came back in a heartbeat. And then you had Crunchy, Ladarius Marshall. And I remember I looked at my phone. I was like, dang. And I was like, this just flipped the league. And then the year after, you had Demarius Wash, which, you know, had gone bounced from a couple of different JUCOs, and you were able to find a way to coach him for a year. And, you know, whatever happens to him moving forward is going to be on him. But, you know, having you in his life, I know, changed it. But those two guys flipped the league and, you know, put you in a position to be really successful. But, you know, that all that stuff's really powerful. And you've touched on a lot of really good things. The last part of, you know, our core values, the discipline part. And you've even mentioned this before, like some people may think that you're a little crazy. My wife has even said, man, Yusuf's intense. She don't know anything about basketball. She's just like, man, he's scary at times. You know, where do you draw that line with discipline? And your teams have always played hard. You are an intense human being. How do you challenge that discipline? You know, you mentioned hard work, and, you know, that's obviously very important. You know, and you love and care for humans, that's your humility part. But how do you become a disciplinarian? And, you know, as kids have quote unquote changed, our generation has changed, how do you become a really good disciplinarian in 2021?
I feel like we're transparent and we're straight up with what we do. Like anything, before you come to me, I tell you how it's going to be. And I explain that the reasons that things are how they are is because I know what you're going into. So basketball, get out of that part of it. This is structure that I give you is going to be for life. Get up in the morning, get your butt to work. You know, eat you some good breakfast, get your day started. Go to work. Like class in the morning is going to work when they get older and they're done playing basketball. You go to work until lunch. You go to lunch. You come back to lunch on time. So I would have my practice after lunch. So that way it's after that lunch, you're feeling a little sleepy, you feel a little sluggish. You got to get up and go back to work and you have to perform. So then you go through that piece of it. And then after that, you know, you structure throughout the day. You got classes again, or either you got study hall, then you got dinner, then you got shots up at the end of the night. So that's that, Brian, when we go home and we're working at night, that's what these guys are doing now. And so that structure, they ended up realizing like, wait a minute, this is not that hard. Like it's actually pretty simple. And the way I relate is just because it's going to be impactful for you that you're going to be able to pass this structure on to somebody else. And then I don't bend. I might bend. Let me take it back. I bend because I've been in their shoes before, but it's always that self-awareness that I give to them. Like, okay, somebody might mess up. Let's say a kid's late, right? And he's continuously late. Some people will say, you know, oh, he just doesn't want to do it. You know, that's just him. Well, you give him a punishment. If they do that punishment every time, the child does not want to not do it. He's just struggling with it because he's never done it before. Like you said earlier, we're taking children or young men, young adults that are they've been doing things 18 years straight one way or some people 20,000 ways. So when you get him the first 3 weeks, he's not going to do what you're asking him to do. It's not going to happen. Just having that understanding of, oh, okay, well, if you do that, you're going to get this. So if they do it, just hold them accountable to it. So then when it's held accountable, eventually, especially running, one kid last year, Demarius Wash, coming from where he's come from and background, and I've been helping Demarius throughout high school. When he went to Sunrise, I was trying to help him, blah, blah, blah. So when he comes to me, he's like, coach, you know, I need to be. I said, don't worry about what you need to be. I got that part. So he was late every morning, B, for weights, but he wasn't missing weights. So I was like, John, something's wrong. Like, if he was like blatantly trying to buck the system, I wouldn't come to weights. I know how I was as a player. I'm not coming. Like, you can get mad, you can run me, whatever you want to do, I'm fine with that. He was literally trying to make it. So one morning, wake up, I get to school early, and I catch him asleep. And they had just woke him up, and he had dozed back off, which that's what they normally have been doing throughout his life. So I say, man, what are you doing? I said, get up. You late for class. And he had already been running. So he was like, oh, no, man, I can't. This running stuff, Coach, golly. So he puts on his clothes, Brian, and runs to the classroom. Sprints. No brushing, no teeth, no nothing. So he gets up there and there's no class. Okay? So he's like, he comes back down the hill. He's like, Coach, you knew I didn't have a class? I'm like, yeah. I knew you didn't have a class. Why you didn't tell me? Well, you should have known, one, and then two, you were late, two, so that means now you ran up here for no reason, you got dressed, and then three, you were late for weights this morning. Let's go. You got your punishment. And he was like, wow, I get it now. And I was like, what? He was like, don't be late. Duh. You know what I'm saying? It's not as hard as they make it seem until you put it in their face and they say, wait a minute. Okay, that was on my own time, so I got up too early to run to a class that I wanted to be in the class. I wanted to make the class because I want to keep Coach alive with my, but then it starts that self-awareness that I got to take care of myself. I supposed to know what my schedule is. I supposed to know, because you can end up in a situation where you could be screwed not knowing what you're supposed to be doing and not being on time and not being early. So for me, I always tell them, this is how our structure is going to be. I'm not going to bend on this type of structure because you're going to do this when you get older. So now I got them waking up at 6 a.m. So now they're going to eat, you know, they're going to lift, they're going to eat. So now when they get older, Brian, they're going to get up at 6 a.m. You know how that clock does in your body. Like, regardless of what your wife says about Saturday morning, we're going to sleep in, with the baby's going to be asleep, and we're going to give us melatonin. You can say all that stuff. When Saturday morning hits, Brian, at 6 a.m., around 5:45, 6:15, somewhere in there, my eyes are going to pop up, and I'm going to look around like, shh, dang, go back to sleep. Can't do it. Because now I'm working. Now my phone's rolling because I'm talking to somebody in Greece. I'm talking to somebody in Turkey. I'm talking to somebody in Africa. Oh, what you got on that kid? What's going on with this kid? Coach, I need help on this. And then you got our kids that are playing overseas that, Coach, I'm struggling. You know what I'm saying? So it's putting them in that mind frame and giving them that discipline and then having an understanding of grooming them and not that whole crucifixion. Like, even I remember talking to you early on when you first got the job. And I remember saying, Brian, those are not your kids. They don't belong to you. Once you get your kids in there, it's going to be a smoother sailing boat and ship. And you looked at me like, dude, whatever, you know, because, you know, that first year you went through some ups and downs because you win and lose. And it was talent. You know what I'm saying? You're like, why can't I? And I just told you, just relax. You're going to get it going. You'll have the kids that you like. And now you're enjoying it more. It's the same thing. I recruit kids that need me. A lot of times I turn kids away that don't need me. I've actually told some kids that came and gone to other JUCOs, like, Coach, I want to come behind. No, you're not ready for this. You know what I'm saying? Because the stern, like, I don't bend when it comes to our core. Like, if you're supposed to be somewhere and you're not there, I'm going to run you. And when I run you, there's a treadmill involved. There's this speed button involved. So all that doing the running like you want to do it, mm-mm. And it's a lot of it. It's, you know, you late. It's 3 miles. It's you absent 5 miles. Absent constitutes if we have to come find you and take the day off. Like, we have a day plan as adults. If I have to leave my plan to come find you, to put you where you're supposed to be, you're absent. I don't care if you make it there in time. I don't care if you were in the bathroom, whatever. When you get through with that class, just go put your stuff on. It's in the locker room. Put your stuff on. Go to that treadmill. We're going to put that speed at about 12. And we're going to see how fast you can run with these 5 miles from Forrest Gump stuff. And so Demaryius Watch, for the record, for everybody wondering, Demaryius Watch ran 16 miles in a day. Now, I'm not in junior college anymore, so I don't think I'm getting in trouble for it. But I know, Brian, I know. And I said to myself, when he comes back over, huffing and puffing, I promise, I'm not going to do it ever again. I said, what happened? So I asked John, where y'all been? He was like, man, you told us to go over and run. I said, so how many miles did he run? 16. I said, John, we're going to get fired. I said, you let him run 16 miles. He said, coach, I tried to tell him stop. He said he wanted to keep going. So that let me know that that discipline was happening, and it was impacting him to where, like I say, anybody could have said, I got 16 miles to run. I quit. You know what I'm saying? Because my thing is, I'm going to add something. I'm going to add, Brian. I'm an adder. I love adding. Oh, you're talking back. Three more miles. You're not moving fast enough. Three more miles. You didn't come up here like I told you to. Your pants sagging, your shoes untied. You got that do-rag on. 3, 6, 9. Put them together. John, I'll see you later. And it's just that. Also understanding, I also have this piece for people. You might set standards. You might set rules. Sometimes those standards and rules don't apply to the situation. And you need to throw those rules and standards out and let them make it, like, give them a break. Because as adults, we have bad days. As adults, we mess up a lot. Not some, a lot. There's nobody to hold us accountable other than our bosses. If our bosses don't know that we messed up, we don't have any accountability except for ourselves. So the same thing with these kids. Sometimes they screw up. You don't have to punish them that time. There's a conversation that needs to happen because you need to dig deeper to see where they're coming from. So I get to know, just like you do, we get to know our kids so tough that by the time it's time for me to tell them to do something, it's not hard. And then I always have that equalizer, the bench, or leave them at home. So I've suspended guys that have never been suspended before in their careers. And they would look at me like, I remember suspending Demaryius Watts last year. We lost to Jones at Jones. Nobody pays attention to, you know, who's not playing and why they're not playing a lot of times. So Demaryius Watts and another kid, Shifty, Dante Jackson, didn't play that game. And they were not even on the bus because I left them behind for violating the rule. And they had violated the rule before, and I told them the next time that you're going to violate, I was going to suspend you. A lot of times coaches say what they're going to do, but they don't follow through with it because it's about the win. So I'm saying, so like me going to Jones, I think we had only lost one game. And I had that Pearl River game coming up that I was going to get Oney back. And I still feel like I was going to beat Oney before he pulled the COVID thing or whatever. I'm just joking. Chris is watching. But I think I was going to beat him, though. But we're going into Jones. I'm like, man, I told John. I said, John. And John Neville was my assistant as the head coach at Hines. Now, for people who don't know, he's a great dude, does a great job. I think he's better than me as a coach. He knows way more than me, especially when you're talking about synergy and breaking film down and then scouting and different things. He's tremendous. So I tell John, I said, John, I'm going to have to suspend Washington Shifty. He's like, no. He's like, yeah. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, I'm positive. D. Wash texts me the whole ride from Hines Community College because he thought he wasn't going to get left. I left him. And I didn't tell him I was leaving until I got on the bus, because if I would have told him, I would have probably reneged on him. He'd been on the bus. So, and like I tell people, if you want to suspend somebody, don't take them and sit on the bench, because, you know, somebody told me, sit them on that bench and make them watch the game. No. Because I'm going to eventually look down there like, watch, just go. Don't worry, we'll figure it out later. So when I left him and he texted me, for the ride from Hines and Utica to Ellisville is probably 2 hours, right at 2 hours and a little change. The kid did not let me take my normal nap that I take on that bus because he texted me the whole ride. And I realized I had made an impact in him from a suspension because he had never been suspended before. He had never had basketball taken away from him. So, and it wasn't because the school said it. It was because I said it, because it was a choice for me. So those things with discipline, and it's the same discipline they tried to use on me. It didn't work. It's working now. And like I tell people, it's not about when you figure it out. It's just about you figuring it out. Like, it can, just because your start was bad don't mean your finish has to be bad. So like with these kids, I give them some room. I discipline. I hold them accountable. Yeah. But it's also a whole bunch of conversations that happen every day to where they'll do whatever I ask them to do. And one thing about it as a player, you know, once they go back checking behind and asking people like, hey, coach could play. Like, yeah, he could play. Like, he seriously could. And I train myself. So like I tell anybody, I'm not going to put you through what I haven't gone through. Like, not one time. If I hadn't gone through it, I'm not going to put you through it. Some of the stuff I have gone through, I'm not going to put you through anyway, because I think it's retarded. But I came up in the 90s. That it was not a lot of rules for adults on discipline. So I was one of those kids that got paddled a lot. So, you know, it's just different ways of just reaching these kids, man. And discipline is part of it.
For sure. Yeah, you hit so many different points, and you know, just want to point them out. You know, the awareness factor. You know, you're the chief interpreter of your own reality, and everyone's reality is different. And you've touched on, hey, yeah, you may have rules. The more rules you have, then you got to enforce them. But you always got to find out. You know, you don't want the excuse, but whenever someone's late, the first thing I ask is, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Because you just don't know. You don't know what phone call they just got. You don't know what just happened. And 99% of the time, like, it is what you think it is.
Right.
1%, if you act the wrong way, like, you could tarnish a relationship. It, you know, coaches understand. Coach doesn't care. And those are the worst things that you can hear as a coach, because we do genuinely care. Yes. And we care by holding them accountable. And, you know, those excuses always sound better to the ones making them. And you just keep chipping away at it. And no matter what happens, like you said, yeah, you didn't get it at 18, but you got it at 40. And even though it took you a long time, like, you get it. And, you know, our jobs is to continue to teach the right way. And they may not get it every time. It may be frustrating. And like you said, hey, they may not be your kids, but they are our kids. And you can't save them all, but you're at least going to give your max effort to try and do so. But at the end of the day, they still have to hold themselves accountable. And our job is to teach them that what that looks like. So, you know, some really good coaching nuggets in there and things, but, you know, I like to ask one or two rapid fire questions and then we'll wrap this thing up. But, you know, you've touched on a lot of lessons and things that you've learned. What lessons has it taken you the longest to learn?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Patience. Like, I want it now. Like, and my AD, my former AD, Gene Murphy over at Hines, he was the one that kind of slowed me down with that, because, you know, I don't believe in the whole, you know, oven process. Although I preach about it, I want it now. You know what I mean? Like, I see it. Like, I'm a good visionary. So I feel like if I can see the vision, why can't I have the vision now? But it takes time to build anything. Like, it doesn't matter if you're putting a two-piece puzzle together. There's time involved, because you got to put one piece with the other piece to make it two. So, like, you have to take the time to do it, and it has to fit properly, has to look the right way, and just patience with myself and my success and then impact, because I want to be able to do it, you know, 24/7. So the hardest lesson I would say that I've had to figure out is just having that patience and having that balance of understanding, you know, everything's not going to happen today. Some things are going to happen in 6 months. 8 months, 10 months. Like, Hines was, I was frustrated my first year, and I got a lot of gray hair in the back. I don't know why it grew in the back. I don't understand that, but it's back there. So like my first year, we went 9-12. If I would have had a dog, and Peter, do not come for me. I'm not saying that I kick dogs or anything, but if I would have had a dog, Brian, I probably would have came home and kicked that dog every day, because it was just so frustrating to not win, to not have the guys where I wanted them to be. But my AD was telling me, he's like, you got to build your foundation. Like, your foundation has to be solid first. Then you can build a house on that foundation. And then if the house gets blown away, you still have your foundation. And that's the biggest thing of understanding, establishing the foundation, building the house from the ground up. Pitfalls are going to come. Things are not going to happen. You're going to have all your electrical work ready to go. And you might walk in the house and flip that switch and none of the lights come on. That does not mean you failed. That does not mean you're not where you're supposed to be. It only means that it's going to take a little bit more time. And you got to have a little bit more patience. That, still today, Brian, is hard. Like, here at Piney Woods, getting here. I came in here in July. I wanted to be ready to roll in August. And listen to what I said. July, from being a head community college coach in June 30th or whatever, 31st. July 1, I become the AD at Piney Woods. And it was kind of that, oh, wow, it's a flip. And it's like, okay, I'm ready to roll. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do this. Let's do that. Wait, we can't do that yet. Huh? We can't. No, I want to do it now. And it took me a month to settle and say, okay, this is the new job. This is not Hines that you just left, that you built. You have to build this place the same way. So you got to have the patience. So now I catch myself telling Thomas, Coach Carr, my postgraduate coach, hey, man, you got to have some patience with that. It's not going to happen today. I want this. I want that. Hey, I work on it, but it's probably not coming. You know, look up next year, 2022, when we have a chance to work on our classes and our recruitment and our things like that, we have from March to July to work now, it's going to be a better situation. And that's what, you know, the biggest thing that I've had to learn is just that patience, man, and not getting what you want when you want it. And some people say we're spoiled. And I just tell people I work so hard, I expect. It's not that I'm spoiled. It's not that I'm unrealistic. It's just that I work my behind off so tough that I expect my results to be tremendous. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I look for. And that's that thing that I would say. I'm still working on it, but it's gotten much better.
Yep. As long as you keep working it, that's the most important thing. And you know, you hinted at, hey, your behaviors come before your success. And it's not that they don't always see the work that you put in prior to getting to where you got to. And they're not going to see what you do moving forward. But if you could just keep chopping away and keep chipping away at it and understand that it's not always, you know, even though we're judged by wins and losses, like that not attached to the outcome aspect of impacting lives from the beginning. And why do you coach? Coming back to those reasons, why? And, you know, that's what makes you who you are. And that's what's special. So last question as we wrap up here. So, you know, give our audience, they just listen to you preach and talk and, you know, change their lives, hopefully an impact. What can they do in the next 24 hours and take action doing it? Challenge us. Give us a 24-hour challenge of something that we can do either to help us in our careers, our lives, something along those lines. Go.
Pray. That's the biggest thing I want to pass out to folks. Like, the world we're living in now is going to take a lot of prayer to change a lot of things. If you're not, you know, big on your religion part of it, let's work. Prayer with work with prayer. Either way it goes, it fits, and it helps us out in the long run. The Piney Woods School is something that I'm adamant and passionate about because it saved my life. The stuff that I went through, my mom sending me to Piney Woods was the best thing she could have ever done. And I appreciate her so much for it. It structured me and it disciplined me, but I needed it and it's helped me. And I want to be able to impact many more of like myself or not like myself with the circumstance that I came through. It could be, you know, whoever it is. I would love for folks to hit me. Let's connect. We have an opportunity here where we have international, like we have our I-20, so we take international kids. We are boarding school sitting in Mississippi. We have two boys dorms, two girls dorms, cafeteria. You know, it's a great setup academically. I'm there. I got some other people there with me that are tremendous. My president, Dr. Will Crosley, was the lawyer for the Democratic National Committee under the Obama administration. So we have some impactful folks on campus, and man, we just want to get the word out that we're here. We're open. Call me for information. We have our website. You can call my cell. You know, I'm not going to put my cell out here. If you have my cell, just call me. My email address is yfitzgerald@pineywoods.org. Please hit me, man. Let's try to build this place, Brian. And I know you can help me, man, tremendously. We can build this place to have our own spot that we, you know, if Brian Bender needs a spot to go to for a transition, I'm about to go down here with Piney Woods with Seth. Like, come on. And I mean, we have that place and that space here, man. And we're trying to build this place back to what it was and beyond. So if anybody has any ideas, investment opportunities, we do have. And I say that holistically, like, hey, we can invest in the school and we also have a farm that we can invest in. I'm actually about to start a livestock farm myself. Tyrus Thomas played in the NBA for some years. We came together the other day and we decided we're going to buy some pigs and some cows and some chicken. And man, I'm scared at the same time, but I'm excited because it's something new that I've never been involved in, just learning agriculture and becoming a farmer. I posted it on Facebook. People died laughing like, dude, what are you talking about? I was like, hey, man, I'm about to buy some pigs. I'm going to be a farmer. So investment opportunities to impact more lives. Here where I am, I would love for coaches to reach out, man, because we can do so many tremendous things together, not just with the sport, but with their children, with their grandsons, with their, you know, nephews, nieces, and whoever that needs an opportunity. So we have a postgraduate program as well. Boys basketball right now, we're going to be adding girls next year. So, you know, man, that's me, and that's what I want to put out there. Brian Bender does a great job, and I'm not saying this. Our league is a tremendous league. We have a bunch of coaches in this league that deserve opportunities afterwards. Brian is definitely one. He's done a great job here at Southwest and beyond. And I think, you know, for me, I just want to be able to get as much exposure for Mississippi as we can. So that's my piece.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate the plug and Farmer Fitzgerald. That's the new thing. And you know what's really unique is I don't really talk about my quote unquote background much, but you know, I didn't grow up on like a dairy farm, but I grew up on a farm. And really? Established there's so much to my childhood that I don't always go to, but you result back to where you came from and what you know. And that blue collar work ethic of waking up early, doing chores, having things on top of your schoolwork or your sport that you play. There's so much value in having structure, learning things, seeing a result in something that may be more peaceful than what you even know. And you may find a hidden talent in there or find a new passion or something that requires discipline where you can see some results, whether it's on a farm or an animal, or see some profit in your pocket from something that generated a revenue for you that you invested in. And at the end of the day, that's, you know, being present, like you said, having that faith, you know, being passionate about what you do and what you love, having that purpose, having that why, the humility aspect of it, and then just keep working hard, the discipline, it goes a long way. So really enjoyed your time. Like we said before, your time is the most valuable asset. You donated an hour of your life that you'll never get back, but hopefully it was impactful to everybody that listened today. And you know, help the Piney Woods School out, man. You got to help them out, get them some players, and you're not going to see a better leader in terms of athletic director than Yusuf Fitzgerald. So, Farmer Fitzgerald, we're out. Appreciate your time, and be safe.
All right, baby. Thank you, man. Have a good one.